7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello, Todd. How are you today?
Doing just fine.
All right, it's just you and I today. Greg was last seen on an airplane.
Well, that's his loss, because Greg won't be able to have a face-to-face conversation with our very special guest today, Linda Tablin, the author of Transport Management, Successes and Failures, 2026 book available now from fine publishers everywhere that talks about the communication process when it comes to major events that happen to not just airlines, but the transportation organizations. Linda, pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you and John have actually worked together in the past, so how did you all meet?
We met at an engineering and maintenance forum given by the Air Transport Association way back when, 35 years ago. Was it, John?
Yeah, it was 35 years ago. Where did all that time go?
I don't know. But we've worked together on many projects, I would say. And our paths have crossed at many conferences over the years.
And a few disasters.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
I was a bit surprised to see how much of some of the accidents that I worked that you have written about. I was reading the book, I recognized some of the things that I've heard you say over and over through the years, and I recognized some of the good and the bad in the accidents that I had worked when I was at the NTSB and since, or right. Even before. I mean, we had ups and downs when I worked for US Air, where we handled things pretty good, and then we didn't do them. We didn't. And one of the biggest disasters we did, actually horrible. If you don't pay attention and you don't have process in place, you may not get the outcome that you want.
And having read the book myself, I've been peripherally involved in a number of accidents and have more than peripherally been involved in producing information for the public about accidents and incidents. And I'm learning things from this about how we, even at this show, can go about differently explaining the process to people so that they understand, hey, when things happen and you see these things happening, such as, why is the airline not saying certain things? There's a reason for it. And as you pointed out in your book, the airlines who understood the training that you gave them and actually followed the advice were much better off than those who made it up as they went along, as opposed to following the guidance that you provided them. And one of those key things being, you know, defer to expertise. I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead to your major points here, but this is one of the things that I did without thinking for years. It's like, look, here's an accident. This organization, NTSB or the equivalent, is investigating it. They are the organization that will make any public pronouncements about it. And me personally, especially on this show, we're not going to step on their responsibilities. When they're ready, they'll come out with a report or a press conference. We're not going to do their job for them. We do that, and many of your clients would have been wise to follow your own advice to do that as well.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest mistakes and one of my biggest pet peeves is they think because it's communication that the strategist in the company should be the PR office. And the six causes of these events are, and there's only six causes: operations, maintenance, design, air traffic, weather, environment, or security terrorism. And the experts on those events, on those subjects, are the safety and quality people. And long after the media goes home, it's the people in those departments that have to answer for it. And one example is the Concorde. And Continental Airlines dropped a piece on the runway in Paris that punctured a tire that flew up and punctured a fuel tank. And 10 years after the event, because it's France, and from day one, it's a criminal event, the mechanic from Continental Airlines was prosecuted for manslaughter. So a PR department can't help that guy. You know, it's not a PR event. It's an accident investigation.
At the risk of oversimplifying things, in general, a PR person is dealing with immediate concerns. What do we say right now to people? Whereas folks who are involved in action investigation take the long view. And sometimes the view one has to take from day one is decades long, because in a complex accident, it's not going to be resolved today or tomorrow or even when the final report is issued.
One time I asked the CEO, because CEO's background is usually finance or marketing. I asked a CEO of a company in France, "What's your background?" He says, "Finance." And I said, "Okay." And it was after Air France 447. And the issue was upset recovery training. I said, "Okay, what's your position on upset recovery training for your company?" And he said, "What is it?" And I said, "It's the issue that Air France is having to answer for right now." I said, "So you don't even know how to answer for the issues right now."
And for our audience, Air France 447, this was, I believe, a 2009
Is
event.
off the coast of Brazil.
It was going from Brazil to France, and it went into the Atlantic Ocean during the nighttime. The aircraft, and I believe most, if not all, the victims were recovered eventually, unlike some other airliners. There was a very, very good idea of where the airliner went down. There was a wreckage seen on the surface soon thereafter, and they were able to go to the bottom of the ocean and find it and get the black boxes back.
It took 2 years to get the black box. The investigator said, I was teaching at USC in the accident investigation program at the time, and people in my class said, "This is a French aircraft, French design, French airline, and French investigators. This is a cover up." I said, "This is a multinational investigation. It's not one country that's doing it. Not one country can do this." And the investigator said, "It's like looking for a shoebox in the Alps on the bottom of the ocean." And at the investigators' conference annually, they would have a grid and show how they were looking for it, grid by grid. And they finally found it 2 years later. But that's how long it took, and that's how long they look.
Look how long they're looking for the Malaysian airplane. Well, they're not actually, they're not looking for it. They haven't looked for it for a while, but it's heating up again. They'll be looking in the coming months. They're finally going to look at a little different area of the ocean than the Malaysians would allow them to look at before. And most people don't realize that the country of origin of the airplane, the owner of the airplane essentially controls the investigation. So Malaysia controls the investigation and they tell everybody where they're going to look. and they can prevent you from looking anywhere else. And Malaysia has prevented people from looking at a different area of the ocean where a number of people believe the airplane is. So they're finally getting around to look at it here. It's 10 years later. So there's lots of nuances that go on in every accident investigation. But the face that the industry puts forward, caring for the passengers and their crew members, is important.
The subject of conspiracy goes back decades in aviation. All of us who are here either worked on or were around when Flight 800 went down, and there were conspiracies swirling around then. This is the very beginning of the modern internet as we know it. It was literally 2 weeks after I launched my first website, when there were hardly anything online, content-wise, yet there was a whole lot of conspiracy stuff. Fast forward to the Egypt Air event off the coast of Massachusetts, where the Egyptians have one idea, the NTSB had another, and there are conspiracy theories out there to this day. And fast forward to flight MH370 and 9/11. The idea or the reality of conspiracies and the media, especially social media, how does that complicate what you do in your work or have done in your work?
Well, there's always the conspiracy theory, but especially with the TWA. And I think John was very helpful in the TWA 800 because he organized technical tours of TWA 800 that dispelled those conspiracy theories.
This is the tours of the hangar where the
Because,
wreckage was reconstructed.
yeah.
I brought in over 1,000 people from around the world, technical people, to look at the wreckage, including people from Airbus. And we'd go over what we knew, what we didn't know, and physically look at the physical evidence, if you will, the bits and pieces that were there. And just, you never know who's going to have the little tiny bit of knowledge that could settle or bring something to light when you're looking at that recreation. So, and there was people from the FBI that were not happy with me, but I brought in people from behind the Iron Curtain. I brought them in from the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon. You know, Muhammad Aziz, who ended up being a good friend. A number of people from around the world, just and from the U.S., tons of people from the U.S., from all the major airlines. We probably should do another revisit of TWA 800 on the show. Yes, it's important that you reach out and get all the different pieces in the of the pie together, bring the industry together.
Yes. And in my book, we talk about the value jet hearing. And you and Greg did something phenomenal at the value jet hearing. And you brought in, you had a table of international people to see the reality of how an investigation was conducted. Because in many countries, they're closed investigations or hearings.
Right.
I know there were people there from Sweden. Saab was there, Air New Zealand, Aer Lingus. There were like 12 people, and you gave a briefing the night before as to what they could expect at the hearing.
Yes, I had a lot of criticism for that. I believed it was the right thing to do.
That was your first hearing, and you had the screens that showed the oxygen canisters igniting.
Yeah, the FAA, we did a lot of work with the FAA Tech Center on that. A guy by the name of Gus Sarkos was running that burn facility up there, and we spent a lot of hours with him going over and developing the process that how that
Yeah.
could have happened.
Value Jet's one of the chapters in the book.
That was a big one because the Value Jet was using all their flight attendants to spend to spread the message that they wanted to deliver, which was It wasn't them. They were great. It's not us. It was somebody else or something else. So that was another, not as complicated as TWA 800, but it was a very nuanced investigation because of some everybody jockeying for position. Not everybody, but a couple of key players jockeying for position.
Well, this is a perfect time, I think, to for me to ask this question. TWA and Valuejet were both in 1996, going on 30 years now. And for most of our audience, especially if they're in the profession, this was before they even started their careers. So they might ask themselves, why are we talking about something that's 30 years old? Now, from my perspective, this is something that was part of what I was doing while I was in the industry, something I've studied since. And something I come back to again and again. Basically, my point is, doesn't matter if it happened last week or 30 years ago, if there's stuff to be learned or stuff to be revisited and relearned or learned for the first time, it's fair game.
I have a line I use sometimes in my presentations that there really is nothing new in an accident investigation. We just keep having the same old accidents over and over again. And, it's not one item, it's not one thing, but it's probably it could be six, it could be 10, I don't know what the number is, but the same types that just keep popping up over and over again. We don't ever get rid of them. We learn a lesson, and then 10 years later, we have to relearn it again because we seem to forget, lose focus. I mean, there's lots of reasons. We really do need to have a longer memory of events that cause accidents, and we don't seem to.
Well, from a communication standpoint, Valuejet was bad because the CEO, the FAA administrator came out and said, oh, this is safe airline. There's nothing wrong. But all the signs were there. The staff was trying to tell them, no, there's problems. They weren't listening. There was within the FAA, paperwork was going up to the management desk telling them there was problems. They were understaffed and nobody was listening. So, and then a week later, they were grounded. Isn't that how it happened, John?
Yep. The bureaucracy said they were safe, but within the bureaucracy, there was a multi-month assessment that was done of the airline 6 months earlier. 3 months earlier, the report came out and said that they needed to recertify that airline because of all the problems that they found. And it was sitting on the high-level management's desk with no action.
Problems included previous serious incidents, some of which ended up with an NTSB investigation before the crash in South Florida.
Yes. And several of the ones that we investigated, and I was involved with at least two previous ones. The root cause was pilots wouldn't get paid unless they completed their trip. So if you came out to the airport, did all the paperwork, did you walk around, got up in the airplane, left the gate, taxied out, took off and get en route, and something happened that you had to go to a diverted airport or back to the originating airport, you didn't get paid. That motivation to go to the destination so that at least you get paid for what you did drove a lot of crazy things. Pilots doing things that they never should have, both on the ground and in flight. We had two previous accidents because of pilots doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. It's just the whole airline was disconnected, and that's what the FAA themselves found in this report that came out. And it was not heeded. Now, admittedly, in the government, things take slow motion. Everything's in slow motion. So they had that report for about 3 months, but it was so damning. It should have put stuff, they should have started putting processes in place to move forward. Instead, it just sat on the desk with absolutely no action, no comments, nothing. It was brought in by worker bees within the FAA, inspectors that went out and did their job, came back with the material, gave it to their bosses, and nothing happened. So some of those bosses retired or moved on after that. So it's interesting. Communications takes on a different flavor no matter where you are. And in other industries, it also changes. You know, Linda, in your book, you talk about maritime, you talk about railroads. I had, you know, you talk about me in there about the railroads. The railroads were definitely different than aviation. They are a different animal, so to speak. So safety on the freight lines, the safety takes on a different flavor because it's only their employees, mostly. Commuter rail and rail that runs through cities with grade crossings is an altogether different thing altogether because of the general public risk that they take. I'm sitting right here in the town that I live in Massachusetts, and probably 1,000 feet from where I live is a grade crossing that we've killed at least two pedestrians in the not too distant past, in, not together, one bite and then another one, where they were crossing the tracks late at night and got hit by a commuter rail that's going over 50 miles an hour. So the train's not going to stop when that, you know, when they finally get to see who's on the tracks, the train can't stop. Why people are walking on the tracks that late at night, I have no idea. You know, that's what you get. Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
I'd like to do a piece of commerce before we give Linda an opportunity to talk about her book in detail. And we would like to attract sponsors from across, not just aviation, but transportation, to sponsor our show. You can learn how to sponsor us by writing to us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll work with you to make sure your message really lands. And here's my promise to you. If you sponsor this show, I will wear your hat.
Like Avemco. I'm wearing Avemco's hat. You know, and if you have a, if you fly, whether you own the airplane, rent the airplane, you need to have insurance. And the people at Avemco are outstanding. I mention every once in a while that we spent, Greg and I spent the whole day up at in Maryland at their offices, and they really are fine people. We listen to them talk to people called in with claims, and they bend over backwards to help their people that buy insurance from them. So if you need rental insurance in particular, Avemco opposite, Greg, Todd, you do that, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I am an airplane renter, and I've been an Avemco customer for a couple of years now, at least a couple of years now.
Yeah, Greg uses them to insure his airplanes. He just he sold some and picked up a new one, and he has it insured right now. So they're good people. And back to the book.
The book is Transport Management, Successes and Failures, which is a basically a concentrated set of ideas and insights and advice from your 30 plus years in crisis communications and transportation. And what's the
Okay,
basic
Howard.
message or the basic fundamental idea that you put forth in this book?
Well, it starts out with a few principles. The 3-6-4 method, the three principles. You want to have a message, practice your message, and that you want to remember the 4-point formula. And then chapter two is just 25 techniques of communication. And then there's some stories. There's the Amtrak story. There's a federal government, the FAA, an amazing FAA story of how the FAA employed two contractors in the 90s and imposed harassment and discrimination on the whole agency that's filtered over into the Department of Transportation and the NTSB. And the taxpayers paid for it. It's an unbelievable story that broke in the news on CNN. And then there's the tale of two airlines, the differences between Malaysia Airlines and AirAsia, both Asian crashes, and how one airline was remembered for a terrible communication job and one for a great communication job. And even though the circumstances were completely different, the requirement for humanitarian and emergency response was still the same. And then there's the cruising for life or death offloaded in Africa. The true story of my husband. We were on a transatlantic voyage, and halfway, literally halfway, we thought he had a stroke, and there's no diagnostic equipment. So we were offloaded in Africa, and we found out he had a subdural hematoma from a fall he'd had 6 weeks before. And the insurance company failed to emergency evacuate him to get required brain surgery to save his life. So his daughter and I had to organize it ourselves. And then there's the chapters on the good, the bad, and the ugly with examples of each. So it's a very intriguing story, book, and it uses the principles that I've tested over 30 years. And any company and the managers could benefit from all these principles and techniques and see where managers have already used those things before them.
Now, one thing that caught my eye was what you said about Malaysia and AirAsia, which had fatal events, fairly significant ones, roughly the same time. They both had the benefit of your insights and your training. One
Yes.
of them seemed to have implemented them very well, and the other, well, we can let the audience guess which one that was.
Yes, truly. And the interesting thing is that the one that didn't use them had an emergency response manual draft that copied word for word my 4-point formula.
So why don't you explain
but
that
didn't,
4-point
but didn't
formula?
Use it. The 4-point formula is number one, humanize. Number two, make yourself part of the process. Number three, defer to the experts was the ultimate safety net, because in an investigation or a lawsuit, it's not going to be you who answers for what happened. And number four, give the facts, but only the facts as you know them today, before anything ever happened.
And the defer to the experts portion of it is something that I practice, and I think we practice here at Flight Safety Detectives. When we talk about especially a recent event, the experts are going to be the people who will be giving facts out to the public are going to be the investigating authorities.
That's
And
right. Not the regulators.
And certainly not the, how should I say it, armchair occasional online experts who immediately after a crash are giving you answers as to what caused it.
That's right. And I always am amazed when people say we'll be coming back to you with more details as we get them. They're not, because it's the investigators who will be coming back with more details, because any airline that comes back with more details jeopardizes their position on the investigation.
Now, there is one particular case I wanted you to talk about in some detail. It's one that, again, I got great insights from your book about that, with a backstory I hadn't heard before. This was the 2014 Asiana event, excuse me, 2013 Asiana event in San Francisco, which was a fatal crash of a 777. Three of the passengers were killed in that. But among the other things that happened were the, how should I say it, the misinformation that got out there in the public square, in part due to issues with a certain TV station, issues with a well-meaning person who was an intern at the NTSB, who, make a long story short, several people in the process didn't understand the overall way that things work when it comes to who releases information and when. And as a result, some unfortunate information got put out there in the public.
Well, the NTSB does not release the names of crew. The NTSB does not. And the TV station called the NTSB and asked the person who answered the phone, "Can you verify these names? Are these names correct?" And they didn't ask who the person was they were speaking to. And the intern said, "Well, I'm looking on the internet to see if these names are correct." NTSB people would not tell a TV station, "I'm looking on the internet," and the TV station, if they really wanted accuracy, would not accept an NTSB person saying, "I'm looking on the internet." And a TV station, would not refer to the person that answered the phone as an NTSB official. A person who answers the phone is not an NTSB official. And they continue to call the person that gave them the information an NTSB official. So the TV station kept blaming their mistake on the NTSB. It was not the NTSB's fault. And the TV station fired four people.
You know, when I was at
So
the
that.
when I was with the NTSB, I had to deal with reporters, TV and pencil press, that were knowledgeable, that had would never put anything on unless they could verify it. But those people are all gone. Many of them were let go in their prime, actually, as the news media changed onto this 24-hour cycle where there's a mad rush constantly to get content for the for that 24-hour cycle, and things are getting on the air, posted by reporters that really don't know what they're looking at, and it's all an effort to fill that 24 hours up with some kind of news, whether it's accurate or not. And we're paying, the general public is paying for that today with lots of stories that have no meaning and just cause chaos and pain and suffering sometimes for the families and victims of the event and the crew members' families.
Well, when the TV station went with the news story, they came back in the middle of the news story and said the names we reported earlier were inaccurate. So how is it that they came back in the middle of their news story and realized their names were inaccurate? And they couldn't figure that out before they went with the news story.
For those in our audience who are wondering, which names are they talking about? I'll leave it as an exercise for you to look it up on the internet because the internet never forgets. But I'll just say this. I cannot help but imagine the horror that went through the minds of the folks who live on the air, they're news readers, they're reading something off the teleprompter, and they realize before the sentence is over, it's like, oh my gosh, this is bogus and embarrassing.
It was. I can't believe that they ran with that with those names. You know, that's the way it is in this mad business we're in.
Yeah, I know. I wonder who's clued them in on it.
And again, If you're wondering what we're talking about, go find out for yourself or write to us here at Flight Safety Detectives. We'd be happy to answer any email you have about this or any other issue that we had during this conversation. And again, we are new fans of this book, Transport Management, Success and Failures. It says copyright 2026, but in fact, you can get it right now. And I was told by Linda that if you write directly or go to the website of the publisher, Rutledge, that they will ship it to you for free and will give it to you at a bit of a discount as well. So we highly recommend, if you are in this business, and especially if you don't know much about what happens behind the scenes when you are an organization involved with talking to the media about an accident, if you haven't taken our course, read this book. And that is my second to last word.
And if you want to ask any questions directly, join our live broadcast once a month where we answer questions, both phoned in and email questions. Don't you have a spiel for that, Todd?
Yes, I do. And if I had been on my game, I would have said this earlier on. If you become a member, Flight Safety Detectives, a YouTube member, if you go to the YouTube website for our show, you can join. There are several levels of membership, and those levels of membership give you, among other things, access to material that other people don't have, early access to shows. And for some of the levels of membership, you can be a part of our live show where we will directly answer your question, no matter how unusual or how challenging.
And as usual, my last word is, if you're going to go flying, make sure you do a good job of pre-planning your flight. Do it at home or at the hotel before you go to the airport. Do it again at the airport. Make sure they agree. When you go out to your airplane, do a thorough, thorough walk around, please. We still see a lot of problems with walk arounds not being accomplished properly. When you get in the air, put that head on a swivel. We still have a lot of problems in the air with so many airplanes, so many students, so many professionals, you know, private pilots and above, that are not paying attention because they're focused on doing something else. And, you know, it's just crazy, the accidents that we see in preparing for the show. It's just really defies description. So please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Avemco Insurance Company has been passionate about aviation safety for over 60 years. That's why they sponsor the FAA's Fast Team Wings program and support I Learned About Flying from that. Avemco even rewards safe pilots with reduced premiums of up to 10%. You can instantly save 5% just for being a Flight Safety Detectives listener. Call 800-338-8705 today or visit avemco.com/flightsafety and tell them we sent you.